Welcome everybody to today's session. Glad to see so many of you here. I hope everyone's having a good tech ed so far. Good stuff. So a few comments before we kick off. We're talking about Orchestrator, or Scorch as we like to call it. You'll see my little mascot, Scorch, as you go through, all about automation. So we're going to focus on a private cloud solution today. So if anybody thought we were going to talk about Azure, we're not. But if Jaron's about, I'm sure if anyone's got any Azure questions, he'll cover them off. And the other thing is, I've got a few prizes, some power banks. So pay attention and we'll ask some questions at the end and we'll give you those to win. All right, good stuff. So taking automation to the next level, unleashing the true power of Microsoft Orchestrator. It's an impressive sounding title, so hopefully we can live up to some of that. The only other thing I'd say is, just because of time constraints, we're probably more a 200 with some 300 pieces in it, because we wanted to try and give you both a feel for the whole product and some of the power of it, also to talk to the business problem, but also to dive in. So if you're thinking, oh no, they didn't go into enough detail, just come and see us at the end, yeah? And we'll give you some more detail. Cool. So let's get started. So my name's Jonathan Glenister. As you can tell by the graying hair, I've been around for a while. Background in systems management, IDM, unified comms, and at present I run the Microsoft Professional Services team at Dimension Data.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Luke Wilkins, technical consultant for Dimension Data. I've been in IT for around 10 or 11 years now, and for the past 2.5, maybe 3, focused in on Hyper-V and system center technologies. I'm a firm believer in automation and scripting. I think that in this day and age, time is very, very precious. So where we can remove those tedious and manual processes, I'm all for that. Now, I'm not a lazy guy. I just like to work a bit more efficiently. And I'm a real fan of System Center Orchestrator as well. I think it's a great, powerful tool. And I hope that you can get something from this session today.
Thanks, Luke. So if you haven't sussed it already, he's the brains and I just look pretty. So as you'll see later when we get into the demos. So we were quite keen to get a feel for what you know about the product. And if we find there are lots of newbies, we'll try and spend a bit more time with the basics. But hands up, who's never used Orchestrator or doesn't really know what it is? Okay. That's cool. Thank you for that, Luke.
Sorry.
What about someone who's played with it but not really used it in anger? Okay. And have we got any gurus in the room? We like that. No gurus. Awesome. Okay, great. Thanks for that. That's really useful for us to understand. So just an agenda for you. We'll set Orchestrating context, both in terms of how you use it within your data center environment and also Orchestrator as a product inside the System Center suite. Then we're going to talk, which for me is the more interesting piece, I guess, around the actual business challenge that Fidelity Life had, and then how we got from what was a business requirement through to actually a technical solution. Luke's then got two demos we'll run through, which really show the power of the runbook and let you dive into some of the interesting aspects around published data and some other things. Then we'll talk about something we've termed data trimming. And then at the end, surprise, surprise, we'll remind you what we've told you and try and give you some takeaways around some best practice and some specific technical detail. So pretty straightforward. Start at the top, dive in, jump back up again. Okay. So I hope you're noticing Scorch is appearing. It took me ages to do these. So if we look at an average data center and think about the ways in which you're going to manage it, there's various different ways you could cut it. But in this scenario, I've split it by your applications, your infrastructure, and that automation and service delivery piece. And if I do, yep. There I've dropped the System Center products on top of that, those three aspects of managing your environment. And you can see Orchestrator sits very squarely in the middle there as a process automation tool. we'll come back to it a few times, but it's like the conductor of the band, yeah? You'll see that it doesn't want to play the drums. It'll get System Center Config Manager to play the drums, but it's going to stand there conducting, yeah? And that's the power of it. And we'll talk a lot about integration packs and so forth later. But for now, think of it as a core part of the Microsoft proposition around how you manage your data center. They're just talking a little about how the various products interact. On the right with Virtual Machine Manager, a key part of some of the demos will talk about how we leverage Virtual Machine Manager to allow us to take through the whole life cycle of virtual machine using Orchestrator to manage runbooks and workflows. I'll tell you a bit more about runbooks in a second.
And I think the point to take away from this slide is, if you can imagine you've got all of the different applications that make up the System Center suite, and they each come with their own set of capabilities and functionality. But using the System Center integration pack for Orchestrator that we'll touch upon later on, you can harness and leverage that capability and control, automate and the operation of each of the System Center applications. And so it becomes a very, very powerful tool within your environment.
Thanks, Luke. It's not on the slide because it was getting too busy, but I mentioned at the start, we're not going to talk about Azure, but very much this is a product set and specifically Orchestrator that can deal with on-premise, service providers can use it, and there's an Azure plugin. So it's there to deal with, like, you know, these hybrid clouds, multiple cloud environments, but still give you that control of your workflows. Okay, so let's delve a bit deeper into Sculch. So this slide, which Luke hates, by the way, is a logical view of the product. So there's a few key things on there. The workflow engine I've mentioned a number of times. You'll hear me refer to runbooks quite a bit. And I guess it's simplest sense. A runbook, back to the graying hair, you know, when I started, there would literally be, and there still are in a lot of big data centers, physical books. And those books describe a series of repeatable processes. For example, adding a user to user account to an environment, or how to set up a server, and they were called runbooks, yeah? And so Orchestrator takes that concept and reuses it in a really quite dramatic way. But think of that as we go through. It's about taking a series of repeatable processes, a workflow if you like, and leveraging the power of that to automate your environment. In the center there, we've got pretty standard with most products. We need to hold the information about our environment, configuration, jobs, and so forth. On the right, you've got controlling process, if you like, the brains of Orchestrator making things work. Two other key components down from the controlling process. Orchestrator also includes a design tool. Very visual, and I think when we see the demo, you'll really start to see how quickly you can get into it, and a tester. The comms is in grey for a reason. It's really important as you use the product to leverage those comms, and there's some really clever things you can do, and you'll see later, where we take the information from an earlier activity and we can keep that almost like information in memory and keep reusing it, yeah? And Luke will talk about that whole published data thing. External comms, just both in terms of how you can programmatically use the product and also the interaction with an admin. Okay, so just turning it into a physical view. So you've got the runbook server as that workflow engine at the top. You've got the SQL database in the middle, the management server. I think it's worth highlighting on this slide, actually. You see next to the runbook designer, you've got something called IPs. So that's where a lot of the power of the product lies. It stands for integration packs. So you know I had my analogy of a conductor. We've got the drums over there. We've got the wind instruments. We've got the violins. So the way I talk to those different parts of my orchestra is through an integration pack. I think I've got a slide in a minute that talks to just how many there are. But they're very important in, you know, getting the job done. Yeah, and they're not just Microsoft specific. They cover a whole breadth. Equally, you've got that internal comms, the data bus. We'll come back to it again and again because it's just a really powerful concept and holds all the data you need throughout your runbook and your workflow.
Top tip gotcha from this slide here. you're going to be spending a lot of time in the runbook designer and also the runbook tester. The designer, you're there creating and editing your runbooks. But you're also going to rely upon the tester when you need to debug, just get that visual representation of how your runbooks are flowing through. You have to be very, very careful, and this is the gotcha. The runbook tester is not a sandboxed environment. So if your runbook is targeting, say, production infrastructure or production data, for example, although you're running it in the tester, it's still going to run on that production infrastructure or data. So you've got to be really, really careful that when you are testing your runbooks, that you're using just dummy data or dummy virtual machines, for example.
But I guess one of the good things is breakpoints. So you can always...
Yeah, for sure. So within the tester, you can set breakpoints on a particular activity. You can have a look at the flow and any logic that you may have in there up until that particular activity where you have that breakpoint set, and then it'll stop. You can step over it if need be. But yeah, in our example where we are cloning virtual machines, you can set a breakpoint and say, hey, we'll run up to here, but we're not actually going to invoke that particular activity and clone any virtual machine. So yeah, very handy.
I didn't touch on it, I won't really dwell, but this is quite interesting, the REST stuff. So basically what that gives you is a programmatic API interface. So you could use like C# or so forth to actually control Orchestrator rather than going for the GUI. So it's a really powerful mechanism to actually remove the admin, if you like, from this equation, yeah? I mentioned the integration packs. There are quite a lot more. I couldn't fit them on without making it too small. I think it's worth saying, you know, you've got the whole range of Microsoft products there, but you've also got some, you know, quite a lot of power from some of the vendors. So HP, IBM provide these IPs. You can directly interface with their own systems management product or some of the other components they have, like in the case of HP, Service Manager. Equally, a really powerful one there is the VMware one. There's the REST one I mentioned to you. And as well, you can just create them your own. There's a dev kit, and they're not as tricky to do as you might imagine, but a lot of power there. It's worth noting, I guess, Orchestrator has been in Microsoft's hands since 2009 when they bought it, but Apalis, the product it came from, has been around since the mid-1995 as Apalis robot, and all that good stuff over those 10 years before Microsoft had it, is still there. Yes, it's been rebuilt from the ground up for Orchestrator 2012 R2, but that was one of the powers of that product as Apalis, was the fact it wasn't just about Microsoft, it was much broader, yeah? So don't think, oh my God, another product just to manage Microsoft products. It's much more than that. Okay, so let's try and give you some flavor of what a runbook is. So three key things, really, activities. I'm not going to read it out. Doing stuff makes sense. You're going to want to perform activities as you move through a workflow. Smart links. So they really are the arrows that connect your activities. But the nice thing with Orchestrator is that a smart link has logic in it. So you can basically set conditions on it. Something that catches novices out, which I'm sure Luke will remind me of later, me being the novice, is that smart links can run in parallel. So you can basically have one activity, and if you have two smart links coming off it, you can actually have both of them taking action, yeah? But very controllable, logic in there, so you can decide how you move from one activity to the next. Then this concept of the data bus again, both to hold information from various activities, and also, yeah, just a really powerful piece.
Yeah, you're going to hear us a lot, bang on a lot about published data. If you think about programming and scripting, where that script is holding those variables, think about that published data as sort of a similar kind of analogy. So as you're running through your different activities, they're harvesting all this data, and you're able to tap into that data further along your runbooks. So it's very, very important and very key, the published data is. You'll see that more in the demos.
Okay, so the bit I like, it's a business challenge. So Fidelity Life is one of our key clients, and we've been working with them for a long time. So just some stats. I mean, I've only been in New Zealand for 8 years, but I mean, I was aware of them before, and they've been around since the mid-70s. Very strong Kiwi brand, specialising in insurance, personal protection and savings. Lots of funds there. I mean, 650 million is a big number. Equally, those annual in-force premiums are really large. Yeah? Thinking about the New Zealand positioning of the organisation, about 300 staff and spread across six centres, but more importantly for us, an app dev team who do a lot of work with developing and testing, and they were based in Auckland. Dimension Data provides both outsourcing or managed services to them, and in our case, professional services, consulting, and projects. And for Luke specifically, you know, Microsoft skills, surprisingly, around Orchestrator and Hyper-V. So what was the requirement or what was the challenge? So I mentioned that testing team, and one of the key things when you test, as I'm sure you all know, is basically being able to validate that what you test on your PC or in your sandbox is going to work the same way in production. And Fidelity really got this, and we're looking at a way to reduce the time it takes to test applications, especially in a world we have now where most of your physical infrastructure is gone. You might have a few specific servers that have, for example, SQL with a high transactional load, so they need to be physical, but a lot of them are virtual, yeah? And so to be able to clone virtual machines into dev test gives you a really quick way to validate if your applications are working. So they came to us and we talked to them about how we could reduce the time to test apps. But let's break it down a bit more. So three key things, really. The ability to create development environments from production, clone, as I think Luke said earlier on, leverage existing testing tools, and make it simple and repeatable. It's great. I'm sure I could go in and offer a really elegant solution, but there's no point if only we can use it. So that was a key thought in our minds, that we need to provide something that the app team could reuse and take forward. Okay, so that was a requirement, but let's break it down a bit more. So I've just restated at the top there the two objectives, but in a slightly more technical fashion. So we're going to clone production and provision multiple dev environments. Now, why I emphasize multiple is that if you think about a testing team, one tester might be working on app one, the second tester has a completely different set of requirements. So we didn't want to just do it once, we wanted to do it multiple times. And that kind of influenced some of our thinking about how we're going to deliver this. The second thing, as I said, is that one-click solution. So what you've got at the bottom of the screen there is how we eventually broke the problem down. As with any IT challenge, you've got to, first of all, take that problem and, if you like, redefine it, yeah? Understand the use case, all the details and exceptions. So we did that with Graham at Fidelity, and then we started to look at how we'd implement it. And we felt the best way to do it was to have two distinct processes. The idea of a prod to stage, so production to staging, and then a second one, staging to dev. So you can see that in the center of the screens. I'll go into more detail later, but basically, if you think about production, lots of data, we wanted to do things to basically cut that down before we started stamping out into dev. So staging was like a bit like in SQL language, I suppose, your temp DB. It was a place for us to clean up before we got to development. If you follow those arrows across, what you can see is another concept that we used with the prod to stage, the idea of a master runbook. Both Luke and I, I'm probably COBOL, Fortran, so a bit long in the tooth, but with PowerShell scripting, we come from a semi-coding background. And you know, some of the things you find in coding, you don't have to code to use Orchestrator at all, as Luke will show you later, but there are some good themes that come out. And one of them is the idea of like a master subroutine that is quite elegant, quite easy to understand, and then you dive into, you know, a particular function below that. And so here, we had a master runbook that ran everything, and beneath that were child runbooks. Nice and easy to understand, and also just was efficient for us. Beneath each runbook activities, and then for the stage of dev, the same idea, just a runbook that had activities in it. So what I'll do now is we'll talk a little about the first of those prod to stage. So the blue on your screen is where we're coming from and where we're going to. So as I said, starting prod And we want to end up in this staging environment so we can do some cleaning before we move to the dev environments. The arrows show the flow, and the gray is supposed to represent activities that Orchestrator performed for us. So the first thing we did, always a good check, do you really want to do this? Do you really, really want to do this? So we asked the user to specify some details about the VMs they wanted to clone, and then we initiate the clone using Virtual Machine Manager. At that point, we've got some virtual machines in the staging environment, but we need to now sort the networking and perform this term data trimming, which we'll come into more detail later. I'll just pause a sec on the networking because that's kind of interesting. So as with most large organizations, in production, there were different network zones where the virtual machines sat. And if you think about, you know, modern day SANs, pretty much you're being offered a tier of disks and you're not worrying so much about, you know, where you put a particular workload because you're getting the IOPS and that's it. So in our scenario, what that meant was when it came to segmenting the environment, it was really critical that we had a hard delimiter between prod and dev. And so the way we did that was by manipulating the networking. So we would never get a scenario where a prod DC suddenly had a competitor in staging, yeah? So it was critical that throughout this, we managed the way the networks were set up and the flow of information. And that was our boundary point, yeah? Okay. So we'll do a little demo now to talk about some of the stuff in that. Does he fall off? Oh, he fell off. Good stuff.
Just to set the scene before we move into the demo and a bit more detail about how we came to the whole idea of the master and child runbook approach. So there were 16 or 17 individual virtual machines that we needed to clone. They each had their own set of configuration. So straightforward sort of approach, let's just create 16 individual runbooks. But we wanted to achieve that as close to a one-click and simple solution as possible. So Fidelity staff, when they're using the Orchestrator web console, there's those 16 runbooks listed. Element of human error could come into play, and potentially the wrong runbook could be ran. So let's take it a step up, and let's just have one master runbook, knowing that from that particular runbook we can invoke child runbooks depending upon what the user has inputted. So we'll jump into the demo now.
So hopefully we were going to use Zoom a bit. It gets a bit confusing zooming out. So hopefully you can all see that interface. Before we talk about the actual scenario, let's just have a look at this is a designer tool, yeah? So it's a runbook designer. And let's just, I'll get Luke to sort of move around the screen and I'll just describe some of the pieces. So I guess if we start on the left with where Luke is now, you can see the structuring of the various components there and the various runbooks and certain components like the runbook servers. Down the bottom, you've got the logging. So quite a powerful logging mechanism also using the tester. And as your workflow, your runbook runs through, you get very detailed logging information at the bottom and also errors. On the other side of the screen, he says forgetting left and right, you've got activities. So you know we talked about integration packs, which are the way me as the conductor, Scorch if you like, works with the system center config manager playing the drums and virtual machine manager playing the violin. This is where the integration packs come in, yeah? And you'll see there we've got a group of them. I think, yeah, Luke's on the virtual machine manager ones, and a lot of really powerful activities that take away the need to do things manually, yeah? There's PowerShell under the covers, but some really powerful activities there. I think you've also got Active Directory ones, and then some general ones like file management and email.
Yep.
So that's broadly the console, and the window in the center is where you spend most of your time. So, great. So this is actually the master runbook. You can see there, there's a structure. Hopefully already, you know, even if you don't know anything about this product, you can see there are items linked together, yeah? The items or activities are very visual. And as soon as you start to learn what those icons mean, you can see there's a flow, yeah? So it uses that Visio type style to very eloquently, in my mind, represent your workflow. What we'll do, though, is because this one is quite busy, we won't dwell on it, and we've got a simpler example. But it's the same idea, the idea of a master runbook to control processes below. So I'll talk a little bit to this, and then Luke will go into a bit more detail. So normally runbooks start in the left-hand corner with the request VM name, and that's where, you know, I said we ask the user for feedback, or in this case, which virtual machine to clone. That's the activity where we do that. You can see along the top there we have in red, and you can colour these. These are the smart links. So if we basically get a negative, or we don't get the response we were expecting, then we're going to bomb out and just write an event to the event log, so we've got a record of what's happened. So let's assume we actually got a positive response from the user, and now we're back at the request VM, but we can go down from there. So at this point, we've got two smart links. And so what those smart links do is they've got logic in them that basically manipulates the data from that first activity, the request VM name. They use that data, and then based on that, it flows into a child runbook. And the child runbooks are the icon with the four colours, the yellow, red, green, and blue. So it's pretty simple, but it's quite powerful, the idea of that master runbook at the top. Luke, do you want to speak a little bit more about...
Sure. So as Jonathan says, we're going to start with the request VM name. For guys and girls in the room that have used Orchestrator before, this is an initialized data activity. 9 times out of 10, this is the activity you're going to use where you need to ascertain some data. In this case, it's from the user. We jump into here quickly. So we've got three parameters that we want the user to enter. The first two, prod VM clone 1 and clone 2, basically, user, please specify the names of the virtual machines that you want to clone. The third one is perform clone. We're prompting that the user is needs to type in yes. This is a sort of an error checking and user confirmation. Yep, I want to go ahead with the actual clone. If we go across the top to start off with, this is where we're starting to build our logic using our smart links. So we have an include parameter in there. We're taking that third parameter from the request VM name, the perform clone, where the value does not equal yes, yes, then hey, we'll direct the flow of data from the first activity just along the top to the ascend event log message activity. We're not going to perform any clones at all. Where they have done so, we add our logic into, and we'll take VM specified as the first smart link. Where the top two parameters from that request VM name activity again equal, and in this case it's just the name VM, and where again the third parameter perform clone does not equal yes, then we'll direct the flow of data down and start invoking this particular child runbook, which is in this case run VM prod to stage, and we can jump into there now.
Okay, just before we do that, that request VM name, yeah, we showed you, it's a really simple example, you know, query the user for some information. But it's funny, yeah, so when we were looking at this piece of work, and there's a temptation with Orchestrator, and we'll talk about it later, to over-automate, and, you know, you can be quite clever with it, but the scenario we got to was we were thinking about we could actually programmatically work out all the virtual machines, what they were, was it a DC, was it Exchange, and so forth. And then you kind of have to have a pause, yeah, and you think, why am I trying to do this? And, you know, in our scenario, it was much easier just to ask the user. They knew what they wanted to achieve. And if you think about the actual PowerShell scripts to automate it, it suddenly goes from what seems like a very simple idea to something really complicated. So when you're doing these runbooks, before you go and, you know, solve all the problems of the world with PowerShell or activities, just stop and think, you know, would it be easier just to ask the admin to set us straight and then move forward? So that kind of comes up a number of times. Don't over-automate. Okay, so now Luke's dropped into a bit more interesting one, where we've got one of the child runbooks. So again, we're starting on the left-hand side with the check duplicate. The main path of activity flows left to right across the top, and then we have two points at which we break out if there are problems. So I'll just take you through at a high level, and then again, Luke will just jump into some more detail. So what we're doing with that first check duplicate is we're just making sure with this activity that we haven't already cloned this virtual machine. So say it was an Exchange server, let's just do it once, I don't want two copies. So we do that check. If it transpires we are doing a second clone, we write out to the event log, and then we basically break out. However, if it transpires, this is, you know, as we'd expect, this is a virtual machine we will copy, then we use the integration pack from Virtual Machine Manager, in this case, GitVM. We extract some data from that, and we enumerate it into PowerShell, and specifically with that activity that Luke's highlighted, we're now going to check on the clustered storage volume that we've got enough disk space. Because if you'd be great to keep saying we've got, you know, infinite space for dev, but we haven't. So before we start using up the customer's SAN, let's just make sure that Hyper-V has got enough space available. So we do that check, and assuming it's successful, we then can perform our clone. You know, it's in my opinion, having like a single activity to clone a VM, you know, it's pretty powerful in itself. That would be, okay, not very many lines of PowerShell, but to be able to just take that straight out of an integration pack is pretty strong. Then after that, we move through, again, using those smart links with logic to actually pull information from the clone network. If you remember, I said the key way we delimited our prod from our staging, from our dev, was by segmenting the network. So it's very important to make sure that we realigned the network. Once we've extracted data from the network card, we then can assign it to a new network in staging. And finally, we write out our success to the event log. You don't have to understand VMM to see the flow, yeah? It's pretty clear. You've got a bunch of things happening. Red is bad, and you can see how it steps through. So it's quite a powerful tool when it comes to communicating with other people. And as I said, I mean, you can drop into PowerShell, as you can see partway through. Luke, do you want to just drop in and...
So, we'll drop into clone VM here. So this is a create VM from VM activity. For the people in the room that are used to using Virtual Machine Manager and have gone through the clone wizard, we've got the same number of parameters that we need to populate first off. We set these up first so that the clone's going to initiate every time. So in this example, we just got a destination type, and that's our host. And we just hard-coded a particular host that this virtual machine will clone to. The path, we're starting to build some intelligence into our runbook now. So the path is populated using the published data. The script that runs prior to the clone VM activity, it's going off, it's interrogating the development cluster, it's getting a list of all the CSVs that are available and the one with the most space. So it's holding that name of that CSV as a variable. But because we're in Orchestrator, what we can do is take that variable out of the script, put it into published data along the data bus, and then use it later on in our activities. So in this case here, we're tapping into that, and we're saying, hey, the path, which CSV do I actually want to store my virtual machine on? VM name, just from VMM administration and just sort of ease from the console, we've just added stage hyphen to the name of the virtual machine, so Fidelity staff can see they're in the VMM console which virtual machines are actually in staging. Source VM ID, again, we're tapping into our published data, this time using the get VM activity, all of that data that's harvested about the particular virtual machine we're cloning. We need a source VM ID to target to clone, and so we can populate that. And then away it'll go.
So it's quite a simple example, but you're starting to see we went from that master runbook to this first child runbook, and there's quite a lot of power in there, yeah? I mean, I know we could have given you complicated PowerShell examples, but we thought by just showing you where you could manipulate text, either an input or, as Luke said, some of the information in the data bus, it's teasing you, yeah? There's tons more you can do, but this gives you an idea of some of the smarts in this product. So just before I move on, so what we've covered so far was that prod to stage piece. We talked a bit about the master runbook concept, and then we focused on that initial cloning from the virtual with using Virtual Machine Manager. All right, so let's just look at that second part. I'll just get past this.
Oh.
It's all right, here we go. So the second part, if you remember, we had prod to stage and then stage to dev. So at this point, staging has now got a cloned set of virtual machines. So again, the blue on the screen is the source and destination. So we're actually getting to the meat of this one now, because we can now take those clone VMs and start to stamp them out cookie cutter style into the dev environments. Two main things to do along the way, initiate a mass clone, because remember we've got all of them set up now. And then again, we need to modify the networking, which is an example we're going to give you in a moment. This is where the one click comes in. Because we'd split, you know, prod stage and then stage dev, we can get ourselves ready. And now, in essence, this second run book could be run repeatedly, but you've got a clean set of clones sitting in staging, and now we could just keep stamping them out into different dev environments. So we hadn't forgotten the client's requirement. We just implemented it in this second piece. Okay, so another quick look at the tool. So this one's a bit more complicated, but not much. Okay, so with this one, what we wanted to show you was just some of the branching, and this one specifically focuses on that second piece. And the main ugliness, if you like, is where we do some manipulation around the network cards. But I'll do the same again. I'll take you through at a high level, and I'll get Luke to jump in and just give you some specifics on one of the tasks here. Again, the takeaway for me is you just get a flavour of the product, you start to see some of the power, and you know, see how you could use it in your environment. So we're starting in the top left again. Thank you, Luke. Get some input from the user. We then got a smart link going down to get stage VM. So we're querying those virtual machines inside our staging environment. And then we have a number of paths, yeah? So to explain, so it's more efficient for us to shut the VMs down, because then we can clone them more quickly. And so we need to do a check. And so that little loop there, that square, if you like, that goes around from get stage VM through shutdown VM, that's us just testing if the virtual machine's already down, yeah? If we can't shut it down, maybe there's a bigger problem. So that's why you've got that failure smart link going down to the send event log message, yeah? But if we can shut it down, then you can see, thanks Luke for highlighting, we go to the shutdown VM. However, as I said to you, smart links can run in parallel. So in this case, if we find it's not, if it's already shut down, then we just go straight to cloning. Now we're into the clone VM, and this is where it gets interesting. So that top path, which Luke's going to just, can you highlight? Yep. So that one, basically we had one virtual machine which had both synthetic and emulated network cards, just one, yeah? And so we need to treat that as a special case. So this branch was built specifically to deal with that virtual machine. Now, because the smart links are clever, as the virtual machines, so each one of them, as we come into this point, it'll make a decision. And if the VM that's been selected isn't the one we want, we just continue along the center of the page to make some changes to the synthetic NIC and provision into development. But if it's the one with two NICs, with the emulated and the synthetic, then we perform a separate set of actions. One of the questions when we were testing this internally, this slide deck, was how come that top line doesn't join back up? And so the answer is that because these smart links are intelligent, basically that once the first NIC has been dealt with, the second NIC is dealt with by that central path, so there's no need for it to join up. So that's a question that called me out initially, but that's the reasoning. So let's imagine we've got a virtual machine that's come in and it hasn't got two NICs, it's just got a synthetic NIC driver. So what do we do? Okay, so we get some information from the virtual NIC. Now, it's worth explaining, I did mention about the client had different zones in production, and it's quite common these days to have firewall zones. In this case, we had three. We had a legacy one, we had a DMZ, and we had an app one. So what we could do is we could look at our virtual machine, and based on its network settings, which we got from production, we can now make it go into, say it's dev environment one, we can make it go into the network segment for dev environment one, specifically for legacy. And so that was quite important, because we needed to make sure we're replicating production, and we wanted to split those servers out. An easy example would be, say, with Link Edge would be in the DMZ, whereas Link Front End would be in the app server piece. So you want it to work, yeah? So we need to check their network information and pass it on. So once we have made that decision using the smart links, we go down a particular path. Luke's highlighted a network card that would have been picked up as legacy. And the first activity is to get some information from the synthetic network card and interrogate it. From there, can you just go up to that update?
Yes.
Yep. And then across to update clone. Now we've queried it, we basically can assign it some details in our dev environment for that legacy. And then finally, we come into our update VM, where we perform some cleanup tasks and we write to the event log. So it looks ugly, if I'm honest, but really it's just a flow from left to right, and you've got some points or gates, if you like, where we make decisions, and we can both cater for the general populace of VMs and some special cases. But by special cases, I'm talking about that one VM where we had two network cards. So not quite as complicated as it looks, and once you get your head around it, it's pretty easy to understand the flow. Do you want to drop in, Luke, and give the guys some more info on one of the particular activities?
Yeah, so if we choose just update VM here, nice and powerful, this is going to allow us to en masse change virtual machine configuration. So the virtual machines have been cloned, or the networking has been attached. Let's tailor the configuration further. If you can imagine, there are multiple development environments that are stood up, but we've got limited hardware resources. So we've given the user an option to specify the configuration that they want to apply to each of those virtual machines. If we jump into our optional properties, you can see we've got the usual kind of configuration that you would normally have. CPU count, how many virtual CPUs do you want to apply? We can write any custom properties that for people in Virtual Machine Manager, you know what that is. Any integration services, do we want to enable or just disable them? But if we choose a memory, we can specify it across. And so that's now a parameter that we need to populate. Again, we're going to tap into our published data, because this value may very well change depending on how many development environments have actually been stood up. So rather than hard coding a value in there, we can come in and subscribe with our published data. And now we get a list of all of those activities that have since ran within our runbook. And these have all got information stored within them. In this case, we're just going to choose the user input, that initialized data activity that we had at the start, and the particular users kicked this runbook off. Let's just specify the memory allocation. So the value there is then going to populate that parameter. And then once all the VMs have cloned and the networking is, and this update VM activity is initiated, it'll go ahead and change that configuration as need fit. So really, really powerful and great for doing, as I sort of said in the introductions, removing that manual, tedious process all the time. We've got 16 VMs we want to change the configuration of. Let's do it with one activity. Very powerful.
Just out of interest, what was that before you cancel it? On the operation?
Oh, come back.
Okay. On there.
It's easier, yeah.
If you had one in.
Yep.
There seemed to be two options. You had like a subscribe. What's the variable?
So within each of your activities, if you have sort of states that are going to be the same, a good example, like a system variable. So if you wanted to, if you're always going to target, say, program files, you could target that in as a system variable, and it'll be all right. To be the same.
And you
throughout.
Use that, you can use it across runbooks, can you?
Yes, you can do so as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. It's hard to show you an example that, you know, we want to keep it simple, but we're just teasing you all the time, yeah? But you saw there are tons of activities, yeah? And every single item in the activity presents data into that published, into the data bus.
Yeah.
And you can use it. Either you can hard code, you can programmatically do it. You saw a little bit of PowerShell, I'll give you some more later. That's really the what I think is the strength of the product. Okay, so for anyone flagging, that's it for the demos for now. So we're into the home straight, which we like. All right, data trimming. So I mentioned at the start that we went prod to staging and then staging to dev. And the main reason was because of this, yeah? Can I just say, it took me ages to get those scissors done. And it doesn't really look, I'll have to try better next year. So for us, there was some reasons why we needed to do data trimming. I'll give you three examples. So Active Directory, Exchange, and file servers. If you think about prod, why would you want to trim, yeah? I mean, AD is maybe the easiest example. You might not be so comfortable to give your development team a set of production passwords. But equally, there are some gotchas. Now, if you just imagine running a task against the whole of AD to reset those passwords, I don't know, to password one, that sounds great, but just think about what you're doing before you run it. And often service accounts can be quite painful to reset. Not so much these days, but in the old days, SQL was problematic to reset it. So when you're doing the targeting in the case of AD, just make sure you point, say, for example, use a focus point, like an OU structure. So if you're going to reset all the user accounts, passwords for your production domain, point to the OU and reset them. Most likely your service accounts will be in a separate OU, yeah? But it's just something to be careful of. The other two there, Exchange and file servers, pretty obvious really, you know, masses of data there. And if you don't need it in dev, in our example of cloning from prod to dev, we didn't need it. We needed the structure. So we needed the mailbox structure with the database stores and some of the permissions. And with the file servers, one of the apps from memory was writing to a particular folder. I didn't need, you know, people's home drive, but I needed the structure of those home drives. So that was the data we trimmed. Again, the gotchas, think about permissions, permissions so you can actually access it in the dev environment. That's really important. Why do we do it? I mentioned size, security, and I guess the obvious one is speed. This is the kind of thing that takes you down an order of mag when you go from the cloning. So we're talking days to hours, hours to minutes. If you've got 50 terabytes in prod, you don't want to be stamping that into dev, yeah? So by trimming prod to stage, and then from stage to dev doing the mass clone, we can make that much more efficient and get the time it took down by an order of mag. So I am going to teach you to suck eggs, because I think it's important. We mentioned already the don't automate, and it's very true of application trimming. If there's ways you can do it without actually using Orchestrator, why not, yeah? So if there's a VM virtual machine you can avoid targeting, or if, say, you've got a virtual machine where the disks are split out into different VMDK files, then just pick those files, yeah? You don't have to use programming. Just think about what you're doing before you run it. PowerShell scripts is very easy to use with Orchestrator, and as we've said a number of times, those integration packs are really important and is the main way you work with the product. So just some quick trimming examples. So in this first one, we're generating random passwords using a series of activities. Second one, we're requesting a user for information on a folder location and deleting files. Again, pretty trivial, but nice and easy, nice, consistent. That, interestingly, that get random text has got a bunch of parameters you can modify, so you can set the string size, the, you know, complex passwords and so forth. If it's built in, why not just leverage it? And then the last one, which Luke will talk a bit more about, is one using a little bit of PowerShell script.
Yeah, so we're tapping in again to virtual machine manager integration packs. We're going to get the VM we need to target. We can change the configuration if need be with update VM. We'll start it up, and then just using some PowerShell, we can just invoke some commands on it. And in this case, hey, we're just going to remove all of the log files from App 1 logs folder.
So very easy to do whether you use the inbuilt functionality or whether you just drop a bit of code in, I guess, Luke.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay, we made it. So some closing thoughts. And obviously at this point, Scorch is on top of the world because you've all been paying attention, are ready to win some prizes. And, you know, he's conquered the world, and you're going to go out and start using Orchestrator. So let's just remind you what we've covered, and then we'll give you some tips and tricks and go from there. So at the start, we talked about the product inside your data center and very much focused on it as an automation tool that basically can conduct. It doesn't do the work. It conducts the band, yeah? Whether it be, VMware, whether it be HP Blades, whether it be System Center Configuration Manager, Orchestrator brings it together. It has that concept of runbooks, repeatable sets of activities, and it really gives you power to automate and to meet SLAs. Take out the repetitive stuff and not remove your staff, but allow them to work on things that add value.
I wonder what's the user interface for this? How do you ask your customer to type in the VMs that they want to load?
So Orchestrator. So within the web console,
Yeah,
you're just like a portal, and it's got all the runbooks listed in there, And then from there, when they select it, you've just got a sort of a prompt up. Yep.
Okay, cool, thanks for that. We then talked about Fidelity Life's challenge around the need to get more efficient with application testing, which for a lot of organisations is really important. You want to test thoroughly, but you want to get there quicker. And the way we solve that problem of cloning from prod to dev, break the problem down. In our case, we had that concept of prod to dev and dev to staging, and we had that idea of a master run book that controlled everything, nice and simple, but meant we could A, discuss it with people who maybe aren't coders, and also gave us control. Then we did two quick demos, going through the master run book and giving it a little taster. And then we had that more complicated one with the virtual networks, and you saw the branching, you saw dealing with an exception, and hopefully you got a flavour of some of the power of the product when Luke dived in and just kind of lifted the hood, not fully, but showed you that you can leverage that published data, whether you use static entries, whether you manipulate information in the data bus, or whether you use code. Yeah. And lastly, we just talked briefly about our data trimming, cleaning up AD, getting rid of all those files, and just making it efficient. So some tips and tricks, yeah? As we said, he's a smart one, so mine are pretty high level. Pretty obvious, but just break the problem down to chunks, yeah? I mean, it's like coding, and so if you can look at your business problem and start to articulate how you're gonna implement it, and then that often translates very directly to run books. Having a run book perform one key activity is really powerful. Someone's died. That's probably a bit unfair.
That's recorded.
Don't over-automate. If you can ask the user for information, why not do that, yeah? As I said in our example, we were going to be really clever and programmatically work out the virtual machines. Why bother? Just ask the user for that information. And then you don't need to be a programmer, but think like a programmer, yeah? Functions, structure, and flow. That idea of the master subroutine and then specific functions.
Yeah, for me, when you're in the runbook designer and you're creating your runbooks, try and keep your activities to 10 to 15. You can very, very easily start losing just the flow and intelligence that you might have in there and the logic. Very, very complicated quite quickly. Yeah, I know there's 17 in the second demo, but that was just a one-off. And then number two and three, you can pretty much apply them to sort of the same. They come hand in hand. You get to know your published data. So as you're developing your run books, use the tester, get to see what published data, what activities and what the data is being harvested. And then once you know your published data, you can start applying that into your smart links and building that logic and intelligence into your run books and add your error checking out where need be. Very, very straightforward. As you saw with the first one with the master and child run book, we can just add a quick confirmation and direct the flow of data very, very quickly. And for the people in the room that haven't used Orchestrator before, just go and download it, from Microsoft. You get it for 180 days and fire it up in the lab and just play, and you very quickly just sort of see the power of it. Very easy to sort of pick up.
So some references for you. I quite like the fact you can read about the history of it, and some quite interesting stuff around, how it came from Apalis and all the good work that was done prior to Microsoft's purchase. The standard, TechNet reference, a really good blog, as I know you found, Luke, and then some other references there. Orchestrator guy, he's kind of entertaining, but don't take everything he says as truth. And I guess that was kind of us, really. So before you all disappear, two things. Because we're on the last day, we didn't really put any other sessions to go to, but I guess I'd make two points, yeah? I don't know if Jaron's still here, but if anybody does want more information about Orchestrator, I'm sure Jaron would be more than happy to give you it. We didn't touch at all on anything to do with Azure, and it is really powerful for that too. So by all means, catch Jaron after this, or you're more than welcome to come and see us or to email us. So I've got some of these power banks so we can see who was paying attention. So the first question I thought we could ask was, does anybody know in what month Microsoft purchased Apalis? It was 2009, but which month? Anybody ideas? Hands up.
March.
No.
March.
Hands up, don't do the shout out.
March.
The back. No.
March.
No, not February.
August.
No. March. I'll give you a hint. It's the month of... No.
July.
No.
December.
Oh, your man, December. So the next one, the next one was just,
there you go.
If you're paying attention, you would have seen I mentioned REST, REST, but what does it stand for? But please put your hands out rather than shouting out. Anyone know what REST stands for? Very good. Do you want to do some?
I don't actually have any questions,
oh,
to be
you
honest.
Told me
you thrusted
did.
This upon me towards the... Just before we started.
Oh, go on.
If you pick up those published variables, published data as you call it,
yeah.
Can you perform logic on it and say, all my VMs had four CPU or had X many CPUs, I want my new VMs to have half that and do a calculation on it as opposed to having to hold code in what you're doing there? Can you do that sort of thing, you know, on your published data?
So the question is manipulating the actual sort of published data,
yeah,
sort of.
When you use it later. So instead of just cloning the VM and then saying, I want you to make my new VMs to have two cores or something, I'd clone my VM and say, well, my VM's currently got four, but I want all my dev VMs to only have half the number of my production devices.
Come and see us afterwards. I will show you.
As people are wondering, oh, thanks. Come and see us afterwards, yeah? Thanks ever so much for your time, and enjoy the rest of TechEd. And thanks again, guys.